Radio 1500 AM.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Christy Romero is the acting Special Inspector General for TARP.
We ended up questioning two-thirds of Venable's bill, which was over $676,000. And we concluded that OFS practices create an unacceptable risk that Treasury and really the American taxpayer is overpaying for legal services.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Find news about federal information assurance and new information from various agency CISOs and CIOs on the Federal Security Spotlight on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio today, I have Debbie Filippi. She's the director of the DOD and the VA Interagency Program Office, and talk a lot about medical records and all kinds of interoperability issues in the next hour. But before we begin, Debbie, some people are listening to the show kind of curious about you and your background. Tell us about your background and how you wound up working in this strange position between two fighting dogs.
Well, thank you, John. Good morning, and thank you for having me here today. But a little bit of my background. I've spent the majority of my career in information technology for the federal government. I've worked for the Department of Navy, worked for the United States Marine Corps, the Defense Information Systems Agency, and then the DOD CIO. And I had learned about this position, kind of acting as the referee, if you will, between DOD and VA and on their journey in building electronic health record capability, and was obviously extremely interested. The evolution or the history of this position is the IPO was actually created by law in the National Defense Authorization Act of 2008. And primarily it was born out of the oversight committees of the House Armed Services Committee, the Senate version, the House VA committee, and their Senate version as well, wanting a more expeditious avenue, if you will, towards interoperability between the two departments. And so the IPO was founded. And the language that comes out of the law basically calls for an IPO to act as a single point of accountability for DOD and VA in the rapid development and implementation of an electronic health record system and capabilities that will bring them to full interoperability. So that's how the job came about.
Yeah.
And it sounded interesting, and I pursued it.
If you try to put this in perspective, and I'm kind of an outsider looking in at this whole situation, looks like my son's friends are coming back from Afghanistan, and maybe there's some people complained about how their health records were being handled, and so maybe this is one of the motivations behind some of these new laws about the IPO agency. People on Capitol Hill were saying, no, we've got to be some way to reduce redundant tests. We have to have some way to track this kid who comes back, and he's from Nebraska. He's in the hospital in San Diego, and he's got to be sent to Maine for something or Washington, D.C. And I think that's happened. And probably in bigger perspective, the whole idea of interoperability came about after 9/11, didn't it?
I think that's a great benchmark, although I will say that there's been an awful lot of sharing of information, bits and bytes and pieces of data between these two departments for a very long time. They've got a couple of initiatives, the Federal Health Information Exchange, that basically DOD will provide to VA a Reader's Digest version, if you will, of health information on all military members that are separated. But I think in today's thinking, this isn't just about sharing information. It's about becoming a network of seamless exchange of information. And so that takes on a different idea and a different journey in terms of how to approach that kind of a challenge?
We had Dr. David Blumenthal in the studio here about 2 years ago. I think he's no longer with the federal government. He gave a talk last week. I was reading about it. And many of my listeners are federal IT professionals, and they always beat themselves up, and they say, oh, woe is me. If I had the money to do this, so I could do that. Or if I had more staff, I could do this, and I'm under constraints about security and constraints about mandates. But if you compare their plight to the commercial world of information exchange, the people in the commercial world are having very similar type fights. I mean, it's not just isolated to the federal government. These huge information exchange, there are a lot of them are regional in Texas and Massachusetts. They're having questions and issues with that. And in fact, what the interview with Blumenthal, he pointed out was that, you know, they're up to maybe 20 or 30% of people using electronic medical health records, but still that ain't great shakes. I mean, compared to where you folks are at, I mean, you're almost the leaders in this, so I don't want my listeners to beat themselves up and say, oh, woe is me, woe is me. No, the stuff you're doing is really, it's really the cutting edge stuff with huge numbers of records. So I want to bring that up is that the commercial world's facing these issues and having just as many problems.
You're absolutely right. I happen to bring some statistics with me. There's over 5.4 million unique patients that are within the sharing exchange of the Federal Health Information Exchange. And they've exchanged upwards of 88.1 million pharmacy records, 38.8 million radiology reports, consultation reports, march in at 4.4 million. So it's not just about the exchange of information. So much of this has taken place by way of fax, by way of courier, by way of PDFing now, if you will, through various electronic means. I think it's, as I said earlier, it's about being a part of the network. It's about looking at how health IT can help curb costs, can help in the seamless exchange of information, can help individuals have access and manage their own health information as well as the providers. But one of the biggest challenges is 80% of healthcare providers out there today don't really have an electronic health record capability. So how do you co-opt them onto the team?
Right. And this is just, you know, if I break my leg here locally, I go to a facility in Virginia and then they have some kind of information on me and move on. But in the situation you're in where you have a person who is serving in the middle of nowhere in Central Asia, they get hurt. They're taken to Germany, then they're taken to someplace in Washington, D.C., and they're from Denver. The degree of complexity here gets mighty difficult.
Well, and if you think about it, too, the constituency between DOD and VA is the same. And so what can these two departments do, not only between themselves, to treat the information about their constituency in the same likeness as the individuals themselves are as they transition from active duty status, reserve status, into a cohort that might be attended to by VA? And that's going to be the focus point as these two departments move forward, is how can the business process be seamless and transparent? That has really been the vision of this administration. President Obama, actually it's been about 2 years ago, made a statement. We owe the veterans the care that they were promised and the benefits that they have earned. And he turned to Secretary Gates and Secretary Shinseki to help make administrative benefit as well as health information easily accessible in a seamless environment so that that could establish a standard of high quality care and frankly serve as the model for the nation. And I think when you take a step back, it's not just about DOD and VA exchanging information, but over 50% of their providers are from the private sector. So now how do you put your arm around them and bring them into this exchange network so that you have this robust health information or electronic health record?
I always like to joke with listeners about John Gilroy's donut shop and have an office in Annapolis, an office here, and exchanging information is one thing. But this information here, you have to worry about information assurance. You got to worry about privacy because it's medical records. You got to worry about role-based access. And what about the guidelines for this? It's a major challenge. When I started studying this problem, I looked at the two big acronyms, and I don't want to bore too many listeners with these acronyms, but I'm sure many of the listeners realize the VA uses something called, I think it was called VISTA, and I think DOD traditionally uses something called AHLT, ALTA, is that how you pronounce
that's
that?
How you pronounce
so that's the two big traditional ways these medical records are stored. And earlier you said that there's been some exchange of information between these two kind of traditional ways to store information, but you've done some exchange in the past, is that right?
Yes. As you mentioned earlier, they've had some programs established for exchange purposes, the Federal Health Information Exchange that exchanges health data on separated military members, and then an initiative called the Bidirectional Health Information Exchange, which really got into more the complexities of pharmacy data, laboratory information, radiology data, consults, things of that sort, that on a monthly basis they would exchange on the duplicate cohort between DOD and VA so that there could at least be a registry of this information when an individual was seen by both either a DOD hospital or a VA hospital. That information would be made available to them. This initiative, there's a new initiative called the Virtual Lifetime Electronic Record that in partnership with Health and Human Services, the Office of National Coordinator, Dr. Blumenthal's previous organization, to take advantage of standards that they have been working with industry on and branching out to the private sector using these standards so that the information could be exchanged seamlessly. I kind of call it the Expedia.com of the electronic health record, because it's not the system itself. It's not the processing of the data. It's not the storing of the data. It's actually the exchange of the data, just like Expedia or Hotels.com or any of those other capabilities do. And that's the future of information exchange.
Debbie, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about VLER and electronic medical records. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk here with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Debbie Filippi, who's a director of the DOD VA IPO office. Thank you.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion-resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Steve Shannon, principal at Odin Feldman & Pittleman and a member of the firm's litigation practice group. We've got some interesting topics for you, so tune in. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com and visit my blog at blueprintforwealth.org.
At Equity One, they know you are more concerned than ever about outliving your money. With all the bumps in the road through your retirement years, it's vital that you map out your retirement to protect your principal and gains, minimize taxes, keep more of your Social Security check, and enable your investments to effectively fight inflation. Call Equity One today at 1-877-313-4080. That's 1-877-313-4080, and they'll help you learn how to invest your money with market gains without market risk. If you're a saver, they'll show you how to fight inflation, preserving and increasing your purchasing power without risking your savings. As you age, you can less stand the losses and lack of liquidity in the market, as life has given us less time to recover. Equity One, Inc. looks forward to hearing from you. Call Equity One today at 877-313-4080. That's 877-313-4080. Or visit Equity, the number one, INC.
Don't miss the first annual Backgammon Beating Cancer Tourney, Saturday, February 26th, to benefit the wellness community, providers of free programs of emotional support, education, and hope for people with cancer and their loved ones. Beginners to experts are welcome. For more information, call David Ogden at 301-717-7166. For more information about the wellness community of Greater Washington, call 301-493-5002. All programs at the wellness community are provided free of charge.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
It wasn't so long ago that collaboration was a bad word in government. Today, we know that the only way to solve our biggest challenges is for industry and government to work together to collaborate. At its upcoming Management of Change conference at the Homestead in Hot Springs, Virginia, ACT-IAC provides an ethical and trusted forum to explore solutions to our most pressing IT challenges. Be a collaborator. Register for Management of Change today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Debbie Filippi, who's the director of the DoD VA Interagency Program Office, and we're talking about sharing data with two huge organizations out here. And it's medical data, so it has to be handled very, very carefully. And before the break, we talked about virtual lifetime electronic records. And tell us about this VLER capability and how long it's been around and why did you even come up with it?
So VLER was really an outgrowth of an appeal that President Obama made in April of 08 to the two secretaries with respect to care and provisions made for our well-deserved veterans. And there's a lot of information in the news about backlogs of claims for our veterans and health care capabilities. And so the president looked to the two secretaries, Secretary Gates from DOD and Secretary Shinseki from VA, to say, how can we make this better for our veterans? So the two departments coined the initiative, the Virtual Lifetime Electronic Record, otherwise known as VLER. And what VLER is really about is the sharing of not only health data, but also benefit information, because we all know mortgages and educational benefits and other benefits are afforded our veterans, as well as administrative data. In this day and age of modern technology, how might they be able to get access to certain pieces of information online? And in fact, I was going to make a plug for an online website that the VA has posted for their veterans called myebenefits.va.gov, where a veteran can go and get the status of their VA mortgage application, or they can get the status of an inquiry for educational benefits, or they can actually get insight into some of the information in their electronic medical record. So that's a huge step in the right direction, but the departments are taking it further in a partnership environment. And for the health piece of this, which is the first initiative, they're also partnering with Health and Human Services on a standards initiative that they've initiated called the Nationwide Health Information Network. And that is to reach out to the medical providers in the public and create a standard that they can all share and exchange in and amongst themselves. And so the two departments want to leverage that capability. There is a companion initiative that HHS embarked upon that reached out to the private sector called Beacon Communities in their endeavor to take advantage of some of the ARP funds and foster these standards throughout willing partners in the private sector. So the two departments aligned themselves with that initiative with HHS and thought that might be a good foundational element for getting VLER off into the right way forward.
And this isn't just done with a flip of a switch. This is done in segments or modules or phases. Is that right? How the phases work?
It is. So the approach that the departments have taken is for this first segment of VLER, again, which focuses on health, it is to kind of crawl, walk, run through a couple of pilot scenarios. And the first pilot was embarked upon in December, January of 2009, 2010, out in the San Diego in the VA Medical Center Balboa or VA Medical Center San Diego to exchange just a very small piece of information, personnel data, emergency data, the name of the individual, the name of the patient, just to kind of kick the tires, if you will, on these standards. And what we've done is we've broadened those pilots to the Virginia Tidewater area back in the September timeframe of 2010. And then we just recently went live with our third pilot at Spokane, Washington, between Inland Health, which is the private care provider, along with the Spokane VA Medical Center and the 92nd Medical Group at Fairchild Air Force Base. The last pilot's going to take place in September of this year at Puget Sound with Madigan Army Medical Center and the VA Puget Sound Healthcare System and our private provider we're still doing a search for. But the whole notion behind these pilots is to test the proof of concept in small pockets of information exchange leading up to a national rollout of this capability targeted for July of 2012.
So it's going to be an exciting time for you, won't it?
I think it'll be a very exciting time, not just for us, but we think for those we serve.
That's great. When I think of phases and maybe modules, I think of geographic dispersing and also different organizations. I think this first phase used the VA, DOD, and Kaiser Permanente. Is that right? Were the three organizations?
That's correct.
And in the commercial world, the Kaiser's got a pretty good reputation for being efficient.
Well, Kaiser has has an outstanding system just in and of themselves. So this was something they were interested in participating in because this was about connecting their internal system with a broader system that was probably going to be national. They knew that they wanted to be a part of that network. Many ask because the providers that we partner with, it's done so on a voluntary basis. And, of course, we evaluate based upon how much of the standards, the HHS standards, they've adopted. Kaiser was clearly willing to do that and make their investment to do that because they saw an opportunity to be a part of a bigger healthcare or health information exchange. And I think it's proven out very, very positively for them.
Yeah, interagency cooperation, multi-level cooperation, and now cooperation with partners that are not part of the federal government. So I think even a person who doesn't work for the federal government can understand this. The challenges here and the complexity are very tough because if you look at HHS, they come up with their federal health architecture, and you know, this national information exchange model has to fit within those guidelines, and the people from Kaiser have to understand what those guidelines are before they can commit to them. And so we have three players working together, and I guess the next phase they'll be incorporating more organizations. Is that right?
I think that's a part of the bigger partnership, is that not only is DOD and VA utilizing the standards and the capability that Health and Human Services Office of National Coordinator are publishing for the Nationwide Health Information Network, but we reciprocate through these pilots by saying, hey, here's what's worked. Here's what was a challenge. Here are the things that we need to think about as we move forward. And that's been very helpful to ONC as they try to mature the standards, they try to broaden the standards or the process by which people come on board. It's a very complex spectrum of, I guess we call it the onboarding process for those private providers who want to be a part of this network. And these pilots afford ONC the same kind of feedback for how to mature that as it does for DOD and VA in our exchange of health information.
And I'm sure many of my listeners are scratching their heads saying, well, what about the feedback? I mean, you know, Hampton Roads is full of veterans. How's it been good response, bad response?
Hampton Roads, you're absolutely right, is full of a lot of veterans. In fact, I've got some information here that I wanted to share with you relative to just the cohort base between DOD and VA, and the correlation, if you will, of that population is about 7,400 folks. So that's the community, that's the population, just between the DOD and VA. When you start bringing in the Health Information Exchange, which our partner down there has afforded a huge influx of additional patients that they see on behalf of these two departments, it really grows in leaps and bounds.
Is that MedVirginia or is that a different group?
MedVirginia mm-hmm. is the health information exchange that represents a couple of hospital systems in that vicinity. So the opportunity there is great. Now, the actual exchanges that have taken place is much smaller, maybe about 1% of that population, and that's primarily limited to those who have seen medical professionals during that 3-month period of time. But the fact is it's growing, it's getting bigger, and we get insight into that exchange as a part of the feedback mechanism.
And I think from my perspective, if you look at the VA, they have objectives and goals, and they're trying to improve their system. And if you look at the DOD, they have objectives trying to improve their system. And on top of all this constant change, they have to coordinate with you to have some kind of a fair health exchange and also coordinate with different geographic areas. I think it's an aggressive goal to do that by 2012. I think that's very aggressive.
Well, but you have to be aggressive in this area because the stakes are so high. And I think that's one of the values that the IPO has brought to the table is you're absolutely right. There are these two, actually the two largest federal departments in the federal government. And we now look at things as an interdepartmental initiative, an interdepartmental schedule plan, a way forward. So it's going in the right direction.
Great. We'll take a break and talk more about lessons learned with a couple of these pilots and what's going to happen when this ramps up next year. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Debbie Filippi, Director, DOD VA IPO.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
We need to explore that cave, Sergeant.
Sir, the opening's too small. I can't get a man in there, sir.
I'll go. Who are you?
I'm Sug V, the robot for the infantry, sir.
A robot for infantry?
Yes, sir. I'm small, light, and versatile. A tool that can protect every squad, especially when dealing with the tough conditions in Afghanistan.
Well, what are you waiting for? Get in there, Sug V.
Yes, sir.
For more information, visit iRobot.com. Protecting troops. Saving lives. Making a difference. iRobot.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With Quest's suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's QWEST.com/federal.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Osama bin Laden was living in an affluent compound about 35 miles from Islamabad, the capital of Pakistan. That is going to be a problem for U.S.-Pakistani intelligence. Senate Homeland Security Committee Chairman Joe Lieberman said at a news conference yesterday, Pakistan is going to have to prove to the U.S. that it did not know bin Laden was hiding at that compound. He said this is going to be a time of pressure on Pakistan. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case, which is why they rely on Airink to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available. It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Authors, exploring national security, power, and intelligence in the 21st century. What is smart power? How do 21st century challenges demand a reshaping and redefining of global leadership? And how best can national security leaders transform the intelligence enterprise to meet today's needs? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with Professor Joseph Nye, author of The Future of Power, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Here's Mike Mestrovich, Senior Technology Officer for the Solutions Directorate for Information Management and CIO of the DIA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization and Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by DLT Quest Software.
We actually see virtualization and data center consolidation as an enhancement to security. Simply from the physical component, if I only have to worry about a smaller number of data centers, well then my security footprint is reduced to those smaller number of centers, and actually with the same security dollars, I can focus more intentionally on the security that I want to provide to those facilities.
To listen to the whole program made possible by the Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Your IT infrastructure is complex, and it's going to keep getting more complex unless you do something about it. Quest Software Solutions simplify managing your IT environment, increase security, leverage your existing assets, and help you reduce costs. Physical, virtual, and in the cloud, Quest Software is simplicity at work, and it's available through DLT Solutions. Simplify. Thrive. Quest Software. Learn more at DLT.com/Quest Software.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Debbie Filippi, who's the director of an interoperability project between the DoD and the VA called the IPO, Interagency Program Office. Before the break, we talked about folks in Hampton Roads and the Pacific Northwest, and let's move to the center of the country. Let's talk about Chicago, and you've worked on some projects with VLER in Chicago as well. Is that right?
Well, actually, I'll clarify that just a little bit. VLER is not necessarily the initiative at North Chicago. It's one that we affectionately refer to as the James A. Lovell Federal Healthcare System, a.k.a. JALFAC. Now, this was
He's the astronaut?
He is the astronaut,
indeed. Oh, I get it.
He's a local hero. He lives in the area, and there was actually a new building that was created as a result of the Great Lakes Navy Medical Hospital Center and the VA Medical Hospital Center merging together. They created a new building and named it after Jim Lovell.
Sure.
This initiative, this project, was actually an outgrowth of a couple of studies done by both departments back in the early 2000s that saw a lot of opportunity for leveraging and fusing together various components of their clinics and their hospital system to actually become one organization under the leadership of a VA senior executive and a DoD Navy captain. So this instance, they've merged together as one hospital system, precedent setting, unique, never done before between the two departments. They've created joint environments, but this is actually one organization. And the IT challenge here was, how do you take the big Alta and Vista systems and safely interface them so that they can have situational awareness of one another and basically act as one capability.
And what kind of success has it seen?
Well, I think there's a couple of really huge successes that that come to mind immediately. First of all, the spirit of oneness, the partnership, the commitment to the mission by both the DoD and VA locally and at headquarters, I think, is precedent setting. It really has been a great partnership. I think one of the other huge benefits that come to mind is the looking at the business process in a seamless fashion. I think most of us probably realize that we take on a business process that's either inherent or caused by systems that we use. While these two systems were certainly developed separate of one another, coming together has been quite a challenge for the leadership, but not one that was insurmountable from them. So the fact that VA, as the director of this organization, now takes on a DoD mission of readiness and feels very protective of it, I think is a bright star in one of the outputs here.
And I think when I introduced this conversation, I maybe suggested warring parties here, but I think what's happening is we have a lot of people working together on this. I'm sure they're very strongly held opinions on both sides, but I think they both understand that for the common good of the whole federal workforce, of the military folks coming back in. They have to cooperate and work together. And I think Chicago is a good example of that.
I think Chicago is an excellent example of that. Just to kind of elaborate a little bit, this capability, the IT capability, was first implemented incrementally back in December. And both departments have had people in a day-on, stay-on mode there at North Chicago, knowing that this was going to be challenging, knowing that even once you get it past the user test, there are going to be a lot of new things discovered. And they've been extremely committed to the local leadership as well as to each other to fix things as they occur and try to make this a real success for North Chicago.
When I look at a big organization like the VA, they must have initiatives there to try to improve their system, and DOD has initiatives to try to improve their system too. So you have both organizations trying to improve themselves, and at the same time, they're trying to modernize, and they have to deal with electronic health records. Lessons learned, any duplicate efforts there? Is there any kind of maybe benefit to pushing through this VELR from the perspective of looking at both communities and how they're trying to improve their own software development?
Yeah, I think one of the areas that has really manifested itself resulting from this very intense effort is the notion of the business process and how the two departments have adopted or emerged perhaps different business processes as their capabilities have evolved over time. And since May of last year, they've made a commitment to one another, both DOD and VA, to actually sit down and map out the as-is business process and then map the to-be business process that actually shows, from a functional standpoint, seamless exchange of information. So it's not a rocky handoff or we're left with in the lurch of having to provide faxes of information, but that really the data is treated as part of one seamless network. And I think that's really been very important. So it's not as much about making the systems interoperable as it is about treating the process, whether it's military treatment facility or a VA medical center, as one process.
In the commercial world, medical doctors today are being encouraged to switch to electronic health records. They're getting financial incentives to do that. If they can prove certain requirements, they get compensated for that. Outside of this mandate, are there any other incentives for folks to move forward in this area? What's the motivation for a Chicago hospital to cooperate with you?
Well, I think a little bit different in this instance here. The initiative for the North Chicago JALFAC Hospital is that this is their network. This is their hospital system. This is their capability, and they have patient care to provide. And so they're trying to leverage and take advantage of each other's strengths that they bring to the table and actually are doing that. I visited them just last week, and I'm amazed at how well things are running for them up there as a brand new organization having come together. They were stood up officially back in October of last year, how smoothly things run in this hospital system. So with that in mind, and that actually I think should be in the crosshairs of every decision that gets made relative to health IT, is what's best for the patient or what's best for the uniform member or for the veteran, keeping them in the front of every decision that's made. Because when you do, you find that the right decision is made every time.
So when you look at this is really a relatively new program, 2008, a pilot program, 2009, and then in 2012 it's supposed to be deployed. It sounds like you're pretty optimistic that next year you're not going to be pulling your hair out. You're pretty sure that next year you're going to have a good story to tell.
I think back to the VELR initiative, which meets the profiles that you're just talking about, it's one of those initiatives that everybody has rolled their shirt sleeves up and worked really hard on. The motivation and the incentive for participating in that is the opportunity to be a part of a larger nationwide health information exchange. Everyone from federal government to, across all the federal government organizations to the private sector, I think, see the benefit of being a part of this. And that's their motivation. That's their incentive for wanting to go through the growing pains to get to where we need to be.
So they'll move away from an adversarial relationship to a cooperative or a, or what's the word in the technology, an interoperability perspective to achieve that long-term goal for just next year, which is rather quick. We're going to take a break when we come back, talk more about this program and maybe the future of virtual lifetime electronic records. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Debbie Filippi, who's the director of the DoDVA Interagency Program Office.
Alan Hecht, Director for Sustainable Development from the Environmental Protection Agency, commented during the panel discussion, Beyond Green, Making Sustainability Sustainable.
We're trying to bring the value of ecosystem services into our design of systems. We're trying to move away from saying, how do I manage waste when I could better manage the materials that go into products and reduce waste?
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, Booz Allen.
Amid challenging budgetary and regulatory circumstances, government agencies are under increased pressure to improve operational efficiency and account for impacts to the environment, our natural resources, and society. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton have over 30 years of experience helping organizations assess, improve, and implement their sustainability initiatives, going beyond compliance to integration with and enhancement of the agency's mission. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Homeland Security doesn't just happen. It takes vigilance, intelligence, and experience to see and solve a problem long before it happens. TASC has done this for America's intelligence and defense communities for more than 40 years. As a proven and trusted partner in our nation's security, TASC has the most sophisticated IT solutions and tailored program management expertise to help DHS protect Americans. Homeland Security, by design. That's TASC. Learn more at TASC.com.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Too many leaks. Quest Security Solutions will help you pinpoint the cracks in your defenses and keep your critical data from seeping out. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Join host Jane Norris for Fed Central Wednesday, May 4th at 11:30 a.m. with her guests Matthew Doherty, Senior Vice President of Threat Assessment, Hilliard Heintz, former agent in charge of the National Threat Assessment Center at the U.S. Secret Service, and Mike Gellis, director with Deloitte Consulting's Federal Practice and former chief psychologist of the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, as they discuss the insider threat and how government can build a secure workforce. Don't miss Deloitte's Fed Central program Wednesday, May 4th at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. This week, my special guest is Steve Shannon, principal at Odin Feldman & Pittleman and a member of the firm's litigation practice group. We've got some interesting topics for you, so tune in. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com and visit my blog at blueprintforwealth.org.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, live and in person, Debbie Filippi, who is the director for the Interagency Program Office for the VA and the DOD. Kind of a tough position to be in. A lot of things going on there. Earlier in the show, we mentioned a website. I'd like to maybe repeat that. If people are listening online in September, October, they may want to visit it. What's the website again for the benefits?
Sure. For all you veterans as well as active duty members out there, it's myebenefits, myebenefits.va.gov. And you can go there and get access to a whole host of information relative to your electronic health record as well as other outstanding benefit applications or information that you might desire.
We spent the last, 40 minutes talking about virtual lifetime electronic records. I did some research on you, looked up your profile on LinkedIn, and your title on LinkedIn was Information Sharing Executive. And I'm kind of reflecting, I think everyone in the information world should be a sharing executive. I mean, this is a kind of a catch-all for small projects and big projects, and this is a huge project, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. It's kind of an interesting phrase to use for an initiative about 5 years ago relative to sharing information that might thwart terrorism really has a much broader hue associated with it, because it really is about everything that we do in terms of information sharing.
Interoperability. There are people listening to the show who wrote down that website and maybe are visiting right now as they're listening, and they may have questions about your technical background, so I always ask some silly personal questions here. So I'm going to get about 10 questions here I'm going to ask you and just see where you stand here. What was the year you bought your first computer?
Gosh, I think the year I bought my first computer was 1995.
Oh, interesting.
And that was mostly because I had, you know, access and use of computers at work. And
yeah.
So, you know, the use of social networks and a lot of other capabilities hadn't really burgeoned quite that much at that time. So it seemed to work for me.
Yeah, 95 was just the start, really, of people using web browsers, if I remember correctly. Number of email addresses that you have today?
Gee, I only have 3 email addresses if you count my one at work.
Wow, that's interesting. And at home, do you have a notebook or desktop?
So at home, I have a desktop PC and I have a Mac laptop.
Oh, you're splitting
I'm
the thing counter. Huh?
That's right.
Wow.
I'm a cross-cultural user.
Wow, that's a funny one. And your speed at home, cable, DSL, Fios, what kind of speed do you have connection?
We have cable.
Cable, okay. And I didn't see your cell phone here. Do you have a feature phone or a smartphone?
I have an iPhone that I absolutely love.
Well, that's good to know. Number of apps you've downloaded?
I'd say probably 15. I'm very conservative.
Yeah, that's not statistically, that's right about right if you look at the number of Android and iPhone downloads. Tablets, iPad, Kindle, do you own any of those products?
Not yet.
Yeah. I don't either. And I've tested some Kindles out, and I think it's almost too trendy for me. I'm too old-fashioned for some of this. I'm just not ready for it. Social networking, I do a lot of stuff on LinkedIn. I'm sure you're on LinkedIn also. Facebook or Twitter activities?
So I joined Facebook about 5 years ago when I found that that was going to be the only way that my nieces and nephews would communicate with me. And so I did. And now I must say that I'm sometimes sorry that I joined it with what I see on their walls.
I carry on a book, and the book I was reading last night, it said that email is dying. If you look at the younger generation, they prefer other ways to communicate. And I think we just let's talk about books, though. What was the last book that you read?
So a book I'm currently reading is Reengineering Healthcare Systems by Harry Greenspan. We had talked about that a little earlier.
And there's also another book that I'm kind of also reading at the same time called Making It Stick.
Yeah, Harry Greenspan's been on the air. He's a real bright guy. We enjoyed having him on. Like to have him on again. Maybe we'll have him on in a year, have we both on in a year, and come back and say, kind well, whatever say, happened?
Yeah, where are we now?
Yeah, he had good success in Chicago. Did that, you know, actually apply to folks in New York and L.A. and San Francisco and everything else? This is the last section of the show where we get out of the crystal ball and we talk about the future and talk about 2012. So what are the biggest challenges you see moving forward in this endeavor of electronic medical health records?
So I think there are a couple. You know, we've talked about the safe integration, if you will, or interfacing between the two AltaVista systems in North Chicago as kind of a first step in the partnership for DOD and VA. We've talked about VLR, which is really an exchange of information, not necessarily a system. That the next big step for these two departments is actually, as they're modernizing their EHR, electronic health record systems, is they've made a commitment to do it together. So the how we do it together, the timelines and how we approach it and all of the other activities associated with that, I think are going to be a huge challenge simply because of a lot of the reasons that we've talked about on a smaller scale there at North Chicago are now going to become enterprise issues. And I'll tell you some of the things that that I think are ancillary but pivotal to moving ahead in this area is how are we going to address identity management? Between the two departments, it becomes a smaller issue because identity is really captured very similarly, or DOD and VA can make identity management commitments. But when you talk about managing identity of a patient on a nationwide scale, and you have all of these other systems and organizations that factor into it, and you worry about the privacy of individuals' persona, how do you identify somebody without exposing or creating an infraction on their personal identity values? And I think that's a big issue. I think there was a Federal News Radio reported earlier this week the release of the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace. And we're very hopeful and delighted that there is that national focus on this because it's something that without being solved, the exchange of health information will be hampered, I think, for a long time.
From the perspective of a healthcare provider in Boston or New York, and their concern about information exchange and data exchange models. Where do they view all these initiatives? Do they view that as just, oh, this is just proprietary to the government and this is not have any applicability to us? Or are there more flexible people like Kaiser saying, no, we want to engage with federal activities? Is there animosity there or is there a relationship that can come to something in the future?
Well, I think as we were talking earlier, The proof in the why or the incentive or the value for being involved in these kinds of discussions and these kinds of activities, I think, have proven themselves in spades over time. Now, as individual organizations move forward, maybe they determine that there is not value there. But I think when you look at the impacts to Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and other national systems, and the broad swath of impact that they all have on these private providers, the gap will be greatly narrowed in terms of those who are not interested in being a part of this movement.
Last week, Obama was in California at the Facebook headquarters and did a town hall meeting on Facebook. And this is a huge, big topic. I mean, it's like I'm wondering if back in '95 when you bought your first computer, if you could anticipate. You were interested in the little backwater area of interoperability and sharing and information exchange, and all of a sudden it's gone from being this little backwater. Well, Debbie's in this little esoteric field to right up front in the national news.
Yeah, how about that? It's amazing when you see the burgeoning of this technology and when you see the great ways that people are exploiting it and using it for all wonderful things. There's got to be a nugget there that we can grab onto and either copy or incorporate or leverage or figure out some way to make this a part of our way forward.
Well, Debbie, we have a lot of nuggets of information for you during this interview. If you want to come get more information, Federal News Radio, listen to us in the future, or give that website one more time before we close out, please.
myebenefits.va.gov.
All kinds of information about your federal electronic records. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Debbie Filippi, who's the director of the DOD VA Interagency Program Office. Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for cloud computing, data center, security, and collaboration strategy and solutions.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOP.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. The hour's top story, the world may soon see photos of Osama bin Laden's body. CNN's Brianna Keeler reports the White House is having a tough time making a decision.
While the deliberations, the people who are talking about whether to release this photo, while they are leaning towards releasing it, there isn't consensus. There is some hesitancy. And right now, they're trying to figure out what their final decision will be.
Many people are questioning how bin Laden was able to live in a compound in a highly populated part of Pakistan. CNN's Nick Patton Walsh is at that compound and says there's no sign so far that Pakistani officials are doing their own intelligence sweep of the area.
The Pakistani authorities don't appear to be churning methodically through what's left inside that building. So it's not entirely clear what their purpose will be yet.